9:34, this is the LBC Legal Hour with me, barrister Daniel Barnett. And for a special treat, I'm joined by the absolutely incredible family law solicitor, Neil Russell. Neil is head of family law at Seddon's GSC Solicitor. He is a voice you will hear very often here on LBC, particularly on The Breakfast Show with Nick Ferrari. He advises on all aspects of relationship breakdown, including divorce, children, and finances. His clients come from all walks of life, from stay-at-home parents to captains of industry, high-profile celebrities, and owners of family businesses. He is here for the next 30 minutes to take your questions on family law. Neil, good evening. Thank you for joining.
Good evening, Daniel. Thank you.
We're going to go, first of all, to John from Bristol. John, good evening. You're through to Neil.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. Self-employed mechanic on about $35,000 a year. I just want to know what my spousal liability might be, my spousal payments. We're looking for a divorce. I pay about $10,000 to her as a secretary. We've brought up the kids. The kids are old and they've left home. She's been at home looking after the kids and doing secretarial work. Is there a percentage on my wage? How long would I have to pay it for? Is there anything with inheritance? If she inherits money, would that then stop the payments? Lots of questions.
Lots of questions, John, but the thing is, when it comes to income, the only way we can assess what your wife should receive is by looking at what her income needs are. So we'd look at two things: how much she says she needs and how much you can afford to pay. You have mentioned that she's employed by you, and if that arrangement can continue, that's going to provide towards her income needs. So I can't answer how much she needs. It's going to be how much do things cost, and also money for herself. She's got her housing costs, her living costs. They'll all have to be added up, put into an Excel spreadsheet or into a calculator, and then we'll arrive at a number. And let's just say that number is she needs £2,000 a month, and she's earning £1,000 a month. There's £1,000 shortfall. Now, if you accept that's a shortfall and you can afford to make up that shortfall, you'll have to do it. The other point is she maximising her income? Is she working full-time for you? Could she get another job? Could she find other hours to work for you or elsewhere?
She wouldn't be able to carry on working for me. I don't know if she'd go out to work or not.
But she'd be expected to work. The statute looks not just at income but earning capacity. So her responsibility is to maximise her income, and if she can manage without provision from you, then she won't need it. But if
what about if we're on both? Sorry to cut across you, but what about if we're on the same income?
Well, if you're on the same income, then there's not going to be any spousal maintenance to pay because you're both earning the same. So you're not necessarily going to have more money available to pay her.
And what about if there was some spousal payments and she got an inheritance, quite a big inheritance? Would that payment stop?
Well, if she got a large inheritance and she'd be expected to deploy that income, that capital, to produce her with an income, and that might then reduce her needs from you.
Right. And would these needs potentially carry on for the rest of our lives?
In London, for years, we had what was known as the meal ticket for life, the joint life maintenance order, where someone would end up paying or the other person was receiving maintenance for life. Those maintenance orders are now no longer ordered in the same way that they were. So there would be, or there is sometimes now, what's called a period of reasonable adjustment to help someone maximise their earning capacity. So we're looking at a step down to reduce the level of maintenance and get to a point when that person no longer needs maintenance at all. So you shouldn't end up having to pay it for life. But it's too difficult in the time we have available to give you a definitive answer, either as to the amount or as to how long the payment should be made.
John, thank you so much for the call. I hope that was useful. If you want to ask Neil Russell from Seddon's GSC a question, 03456060973. The time is 9:39. Pat is in Haverhill. Pat, good evening. You're through to Neil.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. It's actually a call about my daughter. She knows I'm phoning you. 10 years ago, she got a divorce from her ex-husband on the grounds of 2 years' separation, and they did it online, so they never got a solicitor involved, but everything was resolved amicably. But just recently, she found out something about... what is, does this say? A clean break order or financial order. That's something she never got. And she's heard he can make a claim on any money she gets in the future if neither of them get married again, which they haven't.
Yeah. Pat, you've highlighted something which I'm always very wary about. Firstly, people divorcing without taking advice from solicitors or sorting out their finances at the same time as their divorce. If your daughter got divorced 10 years ago, she would not have been able to do it online at that stage, if I recall correctly.
She got it for 2 years separation.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Before April 2022, you had to prove a fault-based divorce. Well, it wasn't a fault. You had to prove a reason for divorce, which was unreasonable behaviour, 2 years separation with consent, 2 years desertion, 5 years living apart, or adultery. In April 2022, it changed so that what happened is you now get divorced on the basis that the marriage has irretrievably broken down. And then you wait for 20 weeks before you can apply for a conditional order, and then another 6 weeks before you can apply for the final order, which used to be the decree absolute. That's the divorce process. But on a separate track, there is the financial applications that should be dealt with. And seemingly, from what you're describing, your daughter didn't deal with the finances as she should have done and would have done if she'd been advised. So that if there were no financial claims at the time, then there should have been an order that waives those claims so there'd be a dismissal, so that neither party can bring a claim against each other in life or on death. And if they haven't done that, then effectively they've left themselves open. What is your immediate concern about your daughter's position now?
Well, she owns her own house, her ex-husband doesn't. She is likely in the future to get two inheritances. And if she won the lottery, he can still make a claim on her finances.
Technically, he could, but if she didn't have any money then, and everything that's coming is post their divorce, post the separation, and in respect of which he has made no contribution whatsoever, and she didn't have anything at the time, then arguably, and I use the word arguably, he shouldn't have any claim at all, particularly if he could manage on his own. But there was a case that we lawyers know about called Vincent Wyatt that happened a few years back, where there were two effectively free-spirited people that lived in a caravan, had no assets, no money at all, and they got divorced. And they didn't deal with their finances when the marriage broke down. And then the husband went on to become a seriously rich man, over £100 million, dealing with energy and wind turbines. And the wife then brought a claim against him. Now, she had a chance, and she did get a settlement from him. And the reason why she succeeded, because post their marriage, she carried on bringing up their children, and she made a contribution to the family in that way. And also, the court determined that there is no sort of limitation period, a period after which a claim cannot be brought. So, technically, your daughter is exposed, as too is her ex-husband. But hopefully, you've got nothing to worry about, and the circumstances you've given me suggest that there shouldn't be a claim that will succeed.
Pat, thank you so much for the call. And you sound like a very caring mother and looking after your daughter's interest. Thank you so much. 0345 6060 973. Jack is in Camden. Jack, good evening.
Good evening. Yeah, my question is, I was divorced by my wife, and she applied for the final order, which was granted in September last year. Prior to that, we were technically separated for 2 years, but we lived together. Now, she reckons now she's not divorced, even though the final consent order was issued beginning of last month. And she refuses to leave the home and refuses to contribute to the home, and has also done that since the separation as such. She earns more than twice as I do. And the consent order says that I will take the home, and she has other properties which she will be taking, plus her substantial finances.
Sorry, Jack, let me just interrupt and unpick some of this information that you've been giving to me. You got the final order,
yep.
which was the final order in the divorce, so that that brought your marriage to an end.
Correct.
Has there separately been a financial remedy order that has resolved the finances?
That came about 4 weeks ago.
Okay. And under the terms of that financial order, does it include that your wife is to move out of the home?
Well, the financial order is that I will take over the main home and she will take over other properties outside, elsewhere.
And from when does it say you will take over the home?
When the transfers take place.
And why is there a delay dealing with the transfers of equity?
We don't know. And not only that, she's decided to take us back to court later in about 4 or 5 weeks' time.
For what reason?
We don't know.
Well, you would know because, well, you should know, because if you made an application to go back to court, you're going to be served with the application which requires you to attend court.
So that's very interesting because my solicitors said they don't know why she, despite having a sealed order, is still taking us back to court to look at that sealed order.
Very typically in these orders, it says liberty to apply as to implementation and timing. And
okay.
it may be, and I certainly don't know, that it may be that she wants more time to move out of the property. But if she's not complying with the terms of the order, you can go back to court. You can take her back to court for the purposes of enforcement. And if she refuses, is the family home in your joint names?
Yes.
So your solicitors have prepared for you a draft transfer document for her to sign so that you'll take over the ownership?
There are sets of conveyance and solicitors doing that exactly.
Right. Well, if she refuses to sign and continues to refuse to sign, you get your solicitors to issue an application for her to sign, and if she won't sign, you ask the district judge of the court to sign on her behalf, and then that will be dealt with. Can I wish you luck with that and hope you get sorted?
Thank you so much.
Jack, thank you so much for the call. I appreciate you calling into LBC. Just a moment, we have Simon, a very important caller, for reasons that I will reveal in just a few minutes. The time is 9:46.
Coming up at 10, Nick Abbott, leading Britain's conversation. Next on LBC.
Imagine entering your name and a few details and all of a sudden your car finance agreements that you had before 2021 just appeared on screen along with your potential compensation amount. That's all you have to do on this claim checker from Finance Claims Expert. In 60 seconds, you'll be able to see how many car finance agreements you had attached to your name and how much compensation you could potentially be owed from the recent car finance scandal. Text CHECK to 88440 now. That's CHECK to 88440 now. Claims can be made for free via the Financial Ombudsman.
Imagine becoming one of our 13 guaranteed UK millionaires on Friday the 13th. Whoa! You'd laugh in the face of luck. Friday the 13th will be lucky for some.
Yeah!
EuroMillions from the National Lottery. Play on it.
Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
How would you like to be a Win Plus winner? Enter now to win huge cash prizes and loads more at winplus.co.uk. 18 plus, GB only, T's and C's apply.
If I need an eye test, I don't go to Specsavers.
One thing you won't see at Specsavers is me.
Do I go?
Yes!
I mean, no.
Me? I don't go to Specsavers. Nor you, eh, Spike?
Should have gone to Specsavers. Nah.
Hi, Specsavers, here for your eye test.
They come to me instead.
Come in, kettle's on.
Thank you.
If you can't go to Specsavers unaccompanied, we could come to you. See if you're eligible at specsavers.co.uk/home visits.
The Legal Hour with Daniel Barnett on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
9:48, it's the LBC Legal Hour with me, Barrister Daniel Barnett. I'm joined by Neil Russell from Seddon's GSC. He is here to answer your questions on family law and divorce. Now, Simon in Derby is on the line. Simon is a very special caller, and I've spent the last few weeks feeling a little bit guilty because Simon called up, I think it was 2 weeks ago, maybe three, and wanted to ask me a question about family law, but I don't practice in that area. I don't normally take questions on family law, and I had to turn him away because it's too important to give a glib answer to. So I had to tell him I couldn't help him. It's largely because of Simon that I asked Neil Russell to join me this evening. Simon has managed to get through, which is quite an achievement because there are lots and lots of people calling, and he can now ask his question direct to Neil Russell. Simon, good evening. Welcome back.
Hi there, and thank you for taking my call. I'm conscious of time. I just quickly describe where we explain where we are. So my wife and myself, we basically cut contact with my in-laws. We have no relationship with them whatsoever. Every now and then they try to attempt to come back and reconnect with us, basically, and we refuse to do so. They send us a letter through a mediation organization because they want to basically go through mediation with us. The reason for it is that they want to have access to my daughter. Now, my daughter does not know these people at all because it was over 4 years ago when we made that decision. My question is, how likely is it for a judge to grant them permission to apply for court for them to have access to my daughter?
Well, firstly, I'm sorry to hear the circumstances which you have described. How old is your daughter?
She is 5 years old now.
Okay, I should say, albeit I asked the question, it doesn't really make any difference to the outcome if she's still a child. Your daughter's grandparents, your in-laws, do not have any automatic right to see their grandchild. What they will have to do if they are wanting to pursue this, they'll have to make an application to the court for what's called leave, which is the court's permission to be able to make an application. So it's a two-stage process. It's a sifting process. Yes, they can make an application, but only if the court has given them permission to make that application. And the court will only do so if they believe that it's in the best interests of the child. It's the child's rights that they're looking at rather than the grandparents'.
So what are the basis of that? So when you say the interest of the child, when I do research online, it's very vague. What constitutes the interest of the child?
Well, if it's considered to be in their best interests, if it's going to be helpful and enhancing for the children's welfare, then it can be. If they can assist with the child's emotional and educational needs, if they can assist generally in relation to the child's circumstances. But what we've got to take into account here is if, and perhaps the radio is not the best place to sort of unravel all the circumstances here, but depending on your wife and your relationship with your daughter's grandparents, it may be that the grandparents in ordinary circumstances can be a wonderful part of the adhesive love around a family. In this case, it may be very destructive if you have no relationship with them and neither does their daughter. So it may be inappropriate for them to see the granddaughter, but they're going to have to make up their circumstances and satisfy the court that it would be in your daughter's best interests. Not their best interest, but your daughter's best interest to be able to see their grandparents. Because that relationship, it's not just can they see their child, how the arrangement's going to be made. Is that going to cause undue conflict for the child if you and or your wife are going to have to be part of those arrangements? That could just make things even worse for the child.
Yeah, and as you said, I mean, of course, we can't go through everything on radio, but I can say that it's a happy child. Educational issues, advancing very well, ahead of her age, to be honest. Everything in her life, we're trying to make it as perfect as possible for her. So,
no, the circumstances to which I was referring, rather than your daughter, was how bad was this fallout between you, your wife, and your in-laws?
It was awful for my wife. So basically it was my wife that basically came to this conclusion, yeah, because it was something that she couldn't sustain it anymore.
Right, Simon, we only have a limited amount of time, and I'm sorry that you're so troubled by this, but just be mindful of the fact that the court have to firstly be satisfied that it's in the interest of your daughter for the grandparents to be able to reconnect with her. It's not an automatic right that they have to see your daughter.
Understood. Now, okay, that makes sense.
Good luck. Thank you.
Simon, thank you so much for the call. Neil Russell had a text in, this made me laugh, from Stephen. Hi, Daniel. I'm going through a very public divorce. My ex is the world's most powerful person. Do you think this will affect my stock in my car company? I think the name of this case might be Trump versus Musk. Who would you rather act for in this situation, Neil Russell? Mr. Trump or Mr. Musk?
I'm going to duck that one because I don't know who might end up calling me, so
This is a matter of public record, isn't it? You've actually acted for somebody in that sort of field in the last few years anyway.
I have, yes.
Who was that?
I'm on the spot. It was Boris Johnson.
Boris Johnson's divorce lawyer.
It's a matter of public record. Yes.
Excellent. So if you do want the top divorce lawyer in the country, Neil Russell is your man. If it's good enough for Boris. Let's go to Daniel in Malaga. Daniel, good evening.
Hi, and to your other...
Neil. Good evening, Daniel.
Neil. How are you doing? Just to condense the question, I was in family court a long time ago, so there's no worries about talking about it now. During that period, I took on quite a few non-molestation orders, maybe four, maybe five. And if I was trying to make contact with my children again now, they're in their 20s, would any of those non-molestation orders have any effect on me now? Are they there on record? It was in family court.
Firstly, you use the term you took them on. Sadly, I think you meant that they were ordered against you.
Yeah, I had them served against me. Yeah. Whether they were justified or not, I took them.
Well, typically, those non-molestation orders have a lifetime of 12 months. So generally, they're expired unless they were renewed. If your children are now over 20, so they're still children, they're not minors, they're adults. And therefore, if you wish to reach out to them, there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to do so. But just be mindful, if they refuse, that you want to make sure that if they refuse and you want to persist, that you don't find yourself harassing them.
Exactly that. I mean, over the years that I was in family court, from 2007 till 2012... stop start and then again in 2015 and it didn't work out well for me. I didn't think it worked out well for the children. I'd like to make contact again, and all I was wondering is the mum's influence, whether you believe me or not, the first two molestation orders, after that my lawyer was just telling me all she has to do is say something now and they will just serve them because the others have gone through, so it just the rest just follow on. And in 2012, I was served with another one. I wasn't even in the country. I'd had no contact for many years. I was dragged back into court and told off again and told to go away.
Daniel, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we have quite a few people waiting to speak to Neil. Do you have any further questions for him?
No, just do they follow on, that was all.
Well, generally... typically, they end after a period of 12 months unless they've been extended. If the circumstances in which the actions came about were very bad and very serious, it might have been made for a longer period of time. Without seeing the orders, I couldn't tell you, but I'm just telling you what the position is generally. Thank you for your call, Daniel.
Thank you. Adam, we've got about 1 minute. We're going to squeeze you in. You're through to Neil.
Hello there. Thank you for taking my call. Yes, I'll try and be really quick. I separated my wife about 5 years ago. We have two children. We have a child arrangement order for shared care, 50-50. Prior to last year, she received child benefit for one child. I received it for the other. Last year, she contacted me, said she was struggling financially, so I agreed to transfer the child benefit over to her, so she received for both. And then in December, I received a letter from Child Maintenance Service. She was paying for child maintenance. I appealed against it, and they said no on the grounds that she received child maintenance, child benefit, which makes me the paying parent.
Right. So one of the ways around it, we've got limited time. The Child Maintenance Service are a body of their own, and the procedures are generally dealt with by the parties and the Child Maintenance Service directly. But the position is, if you are entitled to the child benefit for one of the children because they're spending half the time with you, then you should perhaps try and reinstate that, and then you can tell the Child Maintenance Service that you're each receiving child benefit, and therefore there isn't any liability. The other thing is, very quickly, if there is no non-resident parent because the children are spending half their time with you and half their time with their mother, then no one should be liable to make the child maintenance payments. So you need to go back to them. Two things you can do. One is try and get the child benefit into your name for one of the children. And the other thing is to say to Child Maintenance Service, well, I want to make a claim against the mother because she also has the children half of the time. I'm told I've run out of time, so I can't say any more. I hope you get yourself sorted, Adam.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for your calls and messages this evening. Thank you particularly to Neil Russell from Siddons GSC. Neil, hopefully you'll come back soon and do this all over again. I'm back next Saturday at 9 o'clock. Just a reminder, the advice offered in this hour is for your guidance only. You should always seek your own independent legal advice. Coming up at 1 on LBC, it's Clive Bull. But now it's time for Nick Abbott.
Thank you, Dad.